From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, the trial of one of Governor Andrew Cuomo's top aides begins in Manhattan. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on what the trial has revealed so far. And the SUNY chancellor delivers her first State of the University System address. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The trial of Governor Cuomo's former top aide, Joe Percoco, began this week in a Manhattan courtroom where Cuomo's chief of staff was one of the first witnesses to testify. Linda Lacewell described Percoco as a trusted, loyal, and very senior aide to the governor. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt was there and filed this report.
Percoco, along with three businessmen, is accused of engineering two bribery schemes. In one, he allegedly arranged for his wife to get a $90,000 a year teaching job with a power plant company, where she did little work. In the other, Percoco is charged with taking $35,000 in bribes from the Syracuse-based Core Development Company, paid through a shell company set up by another former Cuomo associate, lobbyist Todd Howe. Howe has already pled guilty to eight felonies and is expected to be a star witness in the trial. In exchange, Percoco is accused of doing favors for the businesses, including obtaining a raise for the Core Company president's son, who worked as a lower-level aide in the governor's office. The prosecution called on Linda Lacewell, now Cuomo's chief of staff, who was the governor's chief risk officer when Percoco was in state government. She was so diligent at her job of identifying potential pitfalls in administration projects that she told the jury she'd earned the nickname the Minister of Defense. Lacewell told the court that Percoco, whose official title was Executive Deputy Secretary to the governor, was one of Cuomo's four top staff members, overseeing the governor's public events, hiring for the governor's office, and dealing with labor unions, local government leaders, and the legislature. She says the two were very close and that Percoco would usually be wherever the governor was. Percoco was also close to the governor's father, the late Governor Mario Cuomo, and even, Lacewell testified, had personal information about the Cuomos on his home computer, including details about Mario Cuomo's estate and Andrew Cuomo's taxes. That became an issue, she says, when on April 26, 2016, she received a call from Percoco saying that the FBI was raiding his house and confiscating his personal laptop, as well as documents regarding his wife Lisa's employment with the power company. Lacewell says it was then that she first learned of Lisa Percoco's job. She says Percoco also told her and the governor that day that he had accepted payments from CORE, the Syracuse developers, through Todd Howe. Lacewell says the governor seemed very surprised to learn about the arrangements and asked Percoco to repeat them. Lacewell was also asked by the prosecution about Percoco's time in 2014. That's when he left state government and was off the state payroll managing Cuomo's re-election campaign. She says Percoco frequently occupied his old office, which connected to the governor's office, even though he was not working for the government, and that no one replaced him in the post and the office remained empty. She also said Percoco normally frowned upon giving raises to junior workers in the governor's office and expressed the belief that public service should be its own reward. In cross-examination, Percoco's attorney asked Lacewell to describe Percoco's loyalty to the governor and his well-known desire to protect Cuomo in political and even personal matters. Attorney Barry Borer also established in his questioning that Percoco was well aware that the governor prized integrity and honesty, even emblazoning the words, "We work for the people," on a pin that he required all of his staff to wear. Lacewell will continue her testimony Thursday. The governor's top economic development official for Central New York is expected to go next. In New York, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. The trial continues in Manhattan for one of Governor Andrew Cuomo's closest aides, Joe Prococo. Yesterday, Linda Lacewell described Prococo as trusted, loyal, and very senior aide to the governor. She's Andrew Cuomo's chief of staff and one of the first witnesses to testify.
Yeah, Linda Lacewell was up there telling the truth as she saw it, giving us great insights into the way in which the governor's office worked. Nobody has accused Andrew Cuomo of anything yet, and I suspect we're not going to hear anything specific. She said in her testimony that he was astounded when Prococo talked about the payments and every other thing that he had gotten and what was on his computer and how the FBI had raided his home and taken his computer away. They, of course, have his old friend, Todd Howe, the lobbyist, but who had worked with him and for him, and Prococo's old friend, and he is the star witness. So we're just starting out now at the very beginning, setting the whole thing up. It's going to be a very interesting trial. Remember one thing, whether Andrew Cuomo had anything to do with it or not, in the end, he is responsible for the people who's working for him, for the quality and character of the people that he picks. So in the end, this trial is not a good thing for Andrew Cuomo, who both has to get reelected as governor in 2018, and we keep hearing wants to be president of the United States in 2020.
Well, I guess the question, as we sit here talking about the trial, is as we go forward, will there be anything that comes out that could be damning to the governor? And as you spoke with NYPERG's Blair Horner this week, is the governor going to do anything substantive about ethics to counter what comes out of the trial?
I doubt it. I mean, I haven't seen a great deal of movement in the legislature, real significant movement. Oh, they'll set up another commission which will do nothing or that kind of thing. But in the end, the last thing they want to do, all of them, is to kill the golden goose. Let's face it. Andrew Cuomo has collected over $27 million. People giving him money for his campaign. Some for the right reasons, some for the absolute wrong reasons, because they want something out of the governor's office. We know it. It's pay to play. It may not be illegal, but it is pay to play. We know that. So now is a good time to change the ethics of New York State, which are the ethics of the alley cat. No question. Look, if there's one thing this trial is showing, it is how the game is played, and will show how the game is played, and the lack of oversight that this governor gave to his closest associates. That can't be done away with, David.
Interesting development when it comes to marijuana and legalization. New York has medical marijuana, but of course, Massachusetts has recreational. Vermont just voted recreational, and the pressure, like with casinos, has prompted the governor to form a group to study legalization. And many are saying we're headed in that direction.
David, it's going to happen. The governor is a Democrat. The Democrats want it. It's going to happen, and we're going to have to live with the consequences, just like we live with the consequences of alcohol. Now, when somebody gets into a crash in a car with alcohol, we have gotten tougher and tougher, thanks to MAD and RID and all of those wonderful groups who have said it is intolerable to drink and get in a car. We're going to have to put that message out with marijuana, too. I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I'm not even saying it shouldn't happen, because there is a tremendous illegal industry that has built up around marijuana and marijuana distribution. We know that. We also know that in some cases, it's a gateway drug. We've heard that from Jenny Michaels and other people who are really experts, Dr. Jenny Michaels, in this area. We know that there are going to be problems that come with legalized marijuana. On balance, probably a pretty good idea to have it, because that way you take it away from the crooks, you can tax it, you can do all the rest of the stuff. But don't think for a single minute that there aren't going to be attendant, ancillary problems with having marijuana. That will not be popular with some folks to hear it, but that's what we call tough noogies.
I guess the other part of this is the budget. We're $4.5 billion in deficit, and I did see a report that California has made about $5 billion from the marijuana trade there.
That's exactly what I was just talking about, David. Either the crooks can have it or the state can have it. But if the state has it, they had very well better make sure that they know how to deal with the ancillary problems. For example, do we really have, we know we can do alcohol now when somebody is stopped. Do we really have the perfected test that will allow us to say somebody was inebriated and driving under the influence? And before you get mad at me for saying that, imagine it was your kid who got wiped out, or your husband or your wife who got wiped out because somebody decided to get stoned and drive an automobile. You know, look, we can't look the other way. You can argue for it. I argue for it. But you can't argue that we're not going to have some problems here.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. In her first State of the University System address in Albany, Chancellor Christina Johnson mapped out her vision for the future of SUNY. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there and has this report.
I developed a soaring pride that SUNY is able to offer its students so many different opportunities to build a better world, matched to their own particular talents and interests.
Johnson summed up her impression of the 64-campus system she now oversees. SUNY Board of Trustees Chairman H. Carl McCall praised Johnson's leadership strategy over her first 5 months as chancellor.
I find it more important now than ever that higher education asserts its value to the uplift and progress of our nation. We have a responsibility to provide the high-quality education that our children and citizens need to improve their lives and those of their neighbors. That is why today we should pause and listen to our chancellor's strategy to strengthen our position.
Johnson outlined themes she believes will position the SUNY system as a national leader in higher education.
The four themes of my vision for SUNY are innovation and entrepreneurship, individualized education, sustainability, and partnerships.
Johnson is looking for SUNY to at least double its cross-disciplinary research, scholarly work, entrepreneurship, and outreach over the next decade. Johnson also announced a plan to source 100% of SUNY's electricity from zero-net carbon sources.
As SUNY owns and operates 2,346 buildings, or 40% of the building infrastructure of the state of New York, it's no surprise we are responsible for about 40% of compliance with Executive Order 166. So I say, why wait until 2030? It is my pleasure to announce today that SUNY plans to source 100% of its electricity from zero net carbon sources, including renewables and energy storage, as soon as possible. Last year, SUNY spent $189 million on energy. We will use SUNY's buying power to buy clean power. And the sooner we do this, the better, as we estimate it will reduce our carbon footprint by 400,000 tons of CO2 equivalents per year. Making investments in renewable energy and storage aligns with the recent initiative Governor Cuomo announced to install energy storage regionally in order to increase the resiliencies of our communities in case of a natural or man-made disaster. Let me be clear, when the power is out, we plan to have SUNY campuses have power, the power to help our communities rapidly recover.
Johnson added that effective immediately, all new buildings will be designed for zero net carbon emissions. She also announced a partnership with the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority to help develop a campus facility plan. Johnson replaced Nancy Zimpfer, who wrapped up 8 years as chancellor in September 2017. Audio of Johnson's full address is posted at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. There's a new program in Ulster County, New York, to help prevent sexual assault. The Ulster County executive says the program that provides bystander training for bar and tavern staff is the first such program in the state. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn explains.
County Executive Mike Hines says the Ulster County Bystanders Against Sexual Assault program has been launched in the college town of New Paltz with the help of the New Paltz Bar and Tavern president and town police.
The people who are owners of these establishments, they want their people to feel empowered. We want their people to feel empowered, and we want to be in a situation where we put an end to sexual assault. And this is the kind of innovative thinking that will get it done.
Currently, three bars are participating in the pilot program: P&G's Restaurant and Bar, McGillicuddy's Restaurant and Tap House, and Murphy's Restaurant and Pub. Establishments that have completed the training will receive a certificate designed so that SUNY New Paltz students and area residents will know that the establishment cares about preventing sexual assault. The program stems from the county's Crime Victims Assistance Program. Cynthia Kraft is Enough is Enough coordinator and Ulster County Crime Victims Advocate at SUNY New Paltz. She says the idea for the program came from a tactic that has spread through social media and around the globe, asking for an angel shot. It's where women who need help out of a bad date or unsafe situation at a bar or restaurant go to the bartender and ask for an angel shot, code for please help. Kraft decided to reconfigure this, taking the onus off the victim and designing a training program with offender behavior in mind.
What it comes down to is that most offenders offend against multiple people. So if we can stop one offender, ultimately we're preventing multiple assaults. And that's kind of the premise that we kind of ran with.
Kraft says the program seeks to change the culture that, knowingly or not, supports sexual assault. The idea is to help the bars in Ulster County send a clear message that certain behaviors will not be tolerated and to create a safe space for everyone. Kraft and a colleague facilitate the training and conducted a few in the fall, and she shares some warning signs that are covered in the training.
What we're trying to get them to look for are, you know, that aggressive person who's not taking no for an answer, the group that is using catcalls or put downs, just verbally harassing customers, the person who comes in and perhaps buys one drink but is watching to see who's drinking a lot or ordering a lot of drinks for a particular person. Those types of behaviors that may indicate they're there for a different reason.
Town of New Paltz Police Chief Joseph Snyder says bar and tavern employees are on the front lines in being able to help prevent sexual assault.
Really, they're the eyes for us out there. So their ability to be trained to look for warning signs, to identify potential issues and or a potential victim based on whether over intoxication, whether being left alone by other friends, or seeing somebody that appears to be a perpetrator, particularly eyeing someone out, will be beneficial. And then getting the police involvement or calling for a ride or stopping them from leaving by themselves. It's a great program to assist, and that's why I think New Paltz is a great location for this to be a nice program to try out here.
Again, Hein.
This is really about all of us together working to be able to make sure we put an end to this and once and for all say enough's enough and have it mean something.
Kraft notes that about half of all sexual assault perpetrators are under the influence of alcohol at the time of the assault. She hopes more New Paltz establishments will come on board and ultimately other bars and taverns elsewhere in the county. Hein hopes the program will serve as a model to be replicated across the state. So does Snyder.
I definitely think that this is something that should be shared across the state. We're kind of like the trial town for this training, but the buy-in that we're getting from the employees of the taverns has been awesome.
Kraft says owners of establishments who would like their employees trained in helping to prevent sexual assault may contact her at the county's Crime Victims Assistance Program office. You can visit WAMC.org for the phone number.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustino. Another Democrat recently entered New York's 21st congressional district race. Sarah Eidelman, who has been Town of Greenwich supervisor for 9 years, officially announced her candidacy on January 6. She tells the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley she has always been interested in government and has had a powerful reaction to last year's election.
I want our constituents in New York 21 to have a voice in Washington, and we haven't had that, and we're not getting it now. And I really think with my experience as a supervisor and being elected 5 different times, I think that I have learned how to carry those voices of the constituents back to the governing that I do, and I think I'm well poised to move forward. I have a lot of experience governing, and I'd like to take it to another level.
In the release that was sent out announcing your candidacy, you note that it is time for bipartisanship in Washington and that you have a record of working with Republicans. So,
absolutely. I live in a very Republican district. I've been elected as a Democrat. The town board is 4 Republicans and myself, and the Washington County Board of Supervisors, there are 17 members, and 13 of them are Republicans. So, yes, I've worked across the aisle my entire political career. I had to, and I feel very confident doing that, and I think that we need to take that word bipartisanship and raise it to its real, honest meaning, that it means working with other people from the other party.
Sarah Eidelman, you've mentioned your work as a supervisor. You've also been a teacher. Why do you believe you're qualified to be in Congress?
I have experience governing, for one thing. I know how the system works. Actually, the way we do things at the county level is not unlike the process that happens in Congress. We have a committee system. A lot of work is done in committee where we sit around a table and hash things out. Even though it's so much smaller scale, it's really the same process that happens in Congress. And I also think that I bring something to the table, which is a lot of experience working with people over the years. And I think that's a valuable skill.
There are a number of other Democrats running in the New York 21st District race. What do you believe sets you apart from the other Democrats running for the nomination?
There are 9 of us in the race. And frankly, if the 9 of us sat down and had a pizza together, all of us would agree on almost every topic. So I think what sets me apart is I've lived in the district. I know the district. I've worked with people in the district. I have a lot of experience. I've had experience governing. I've had a lot of life experience as a teacher, as a small business owner. And I can get the vote out. One of the things that we have to really be thinking about as Democrats is when it comes time for the general election, we have to make sure, whoever the candidate is, has to make sure that they can appeal to those Republicans out there who perhaps are dissatisfied with our representative. And I have been able to win 5 elections in a region that has exactly the same percentage of Democrats to Republican as New York 21 does. And I've proven that I can reach across the aisle and get the votes.
You can hear more from the candidates at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1804. Or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.